Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor UK series, brought to you by the Nyarazo Group. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. If you enjoy this series, remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Let's get down to some work. Electa Kudzaibambe, welcome to In Conversation with Trevor.
Thank you, Mr. Ngube, for having me. I'm so privileged to be on this platform. I really appreciate this.
We love what you do, so it's an honor for us to have this opportunity to sit down with you. You're doing something very different and very unique. Try and unpack it to us as briefly as possible. What is it that you do?
Okay, I like to call myself a cultural ambassador in that I want to ensure that our heritage is carried forward through our children. And we do that. We started by teaching Shona online so that we could reach all the children across the diaspora who are from Zimbabwe to ensure that it's not lost in translation and also to make sure that they are proud of who they are and where they come from.
I was struck by something that you said, which runs across the things that you do, which is Ziwa kwa wakabva. How did you arrive at that very powerful statement, that powerful Shona proverb?
I would think it started with my son when it was homework time. So I would notice that I was very keen to do the other homework, but not the Shona homework. I would always sort of outsource that. And I think he began to pick up on...
You as a mother.
Yes.
Wow.
He started to notice that I would pass it on to somebody else. And I think that started rubbing off. And he started saying, I don't like Shona. It's too hard. Because I am the person who's supposed to be assisting him is also finding it difficult. So I reached out to some friends and they seemed to also feel the same way. And their children also didn't like Shona because it was hard. So for me, I thought, we need to fix this because it can't die with me. It has to now, because my son was now fully English speaking. So I then started being deliberate about it, speaking to him in Shona. And I thought, let me start some Shona lessons. And we started among friends. And then it just grew from there.
I'm fascinated. I hear you. Your child is battling with it. You have an attitude to the language. But ordinarily, most of us would just walk away and do other things, but you didn't.
No, because I started to see that I felt like it's got to do with your identity. So the problem with discarding of where you come from, you start to doubt.
You have a lot of self-doubt because you don't even know who you are. Who am I? You're living in brown. I have really rough hair, but you don't know who you are. That's all you know about yourself, but you don't know where you come from. You don't know your heritage because in that heritage lies so many things. So, for example, when I look at my own heritage, I see traits. I see gifts.
And that's already told me who I am because now along my lineage on my mother's side, it's full of teachers. Mm-hmm. On my father's side, there's musicians. Also on my mother's side, there's a few musicians. But so it's already told me that, perhaps I could dabble in teaching and in music. And so that has actually shaped who I am by just looking back to see where I come from.
What kind of feedback are you getting regarding the work that you're doing, particularly the teaching Shona?
Oh, the parents were like, thank you so much. And I think what was difficult for them is if you're in a home, suppose in Canada, you are the only ones who speak Shona, the three of you, you and your children, well, you, the parents, and the children. So now the children are no longer surrounded by anyone else who speaks Shona. So it gets lost. Because everyone is speaking English, particularly my generation, because we were pushed to speak English. Our parents really wanted us to do well. So they really pushed us to these good schools to speak English throughout and learn really good English so that, you know, you can do well in life. But unfortunately, the unintended consequences were now we are parents who don't know how to speak Shona to our own children. So Yeah.
Have you had different kind of responses? Look, I'm in the UK, I'm in Canada, what do I need Shona for?
Oh, yes. Not from the people who sign up, because clearly they are happy with this project. But I think I was like that myself. It's not like I'm going to use it. I'll give you an example of myself. Personally, at school, we only had to do Shona up to ZJC. Then after that, you can drop it. And we all did, because it was hard. It was not necessary. It's just like, what am I going to use it for? But you are going to need it. Because here I am in the UK, and I'm so proud of who I am. And you'll find that a lot of, especially now with this globalization, a lot of people are marrying into other cultures. And you'll find a lot of my adult students are actually spouses of Zimbabweans who have come to the lesson to learn about our culture. So there must be something great about it if they want to know more. They want to learn the language. They want to learn the culture. Especially the adults, we teach them about our actual culture. If it's a lady, we're going to teach her, this is what Murora does. This is your duty. When you visit your mother-in-law, this is the expectation. And so it's almost sort of bringing them in, and they absolutely love it. Man, it's beautiful. It's so much fun to share what I'm about. But now it's difficult if you don't even know what you're about.
So I get the sense, Electa, that you are correcting what went wrong with our upbringing, which has not been corrected generally. Were you to go back, rewind your life to that ZJC, what something different that you'd do regarding the way our languages are taught?
I think I would make it compulsory, but also make it not so difficult. That's the truth. The thing is, I grew up in a home where my parents both spoke to us in Shona. But they didn't talk to me in Tsumone Matimikira. I mean, once in a while, if I was naughty, I just knew I'm in trouble. But you see, what I feel like, for me personally, when you now start bringing in some of the stuff, it's a bit difficult. But I don't want to make it sound too difficult. I just think maybe the way it's taught, the way it's taught and how it's put across. I'll give you, like, for now, my objective is to make it as relevant as possible.
Let's go there. How are you doing it? You found innovative ways of teaching Shona. Talk to us through that.
Okay, so one of the things I personally prefer to teach children. I have other teachers who teach the adults. But for children, I use music. I find that they do better with retaining information if it's sung. Because I always say, if you can sing it, you can say it. So we start with just singing and just making it more fun and not blackboard. I call it blackboard teaching, which is very it's kind of boring. We put it into a song and we do actions and we dance to that. And we use a lot of colors, even in our lessons. The material that I use, it's very colorful. And I try my best to be as animated as possible and short. It's not a three-hour lesson, 30 minutes, and it's probably 20 minutes. And then the other 10 minutes, we're either dancing, we're sharing stories, and we are singing.
Examples of songs that you sing?
Okay, I'll sing you. So I've had to write some songs.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like there were enough songs to sing. There's one about the weather. It's called Mamiriro Ekunze. So that one goes, Mamiriro Ekunze, Mamiriro Ekunze. Kana kuchipisa tinopfeka ngowani. And then we learn about this. So you've already learned about what a hat is. You've already learned what kupisa is. You also learn what you wear. So now they've already chunk learned something in a song without even realizing it.
That's beautiful.
So when the next lesson, so from that lesson forward, I will ask you, Tarisa Panze. So we do a little rhyme. Tarisa Panze, Tarisa Panze, Kwakamira say. Then everyone takes a turn. Kurukupisa. Because they're all over the world. So the one in Canada is going to look out the window. It's snowy. They'll tell me Kurukutonora. The one in Zimbabwe, it's hot. They'll tell me Kurukupisa. So that's how we do it.
And you've written a book.
Yes.
Which is also on weather. Mamirure Ekunze.
Yes.
Why is weather become the tool by which you teach?
Well, this is just one of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, global warming, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's just one of those things that children need to learn to say amongst many other things. So we will do maybe a song about what your routine is in the morning. So we'll sing a song about when I wake up, this is what I do, this is what I eat. Mm. Then, so the next maybe progression is, let's learn about the weather since I'm now outside. Mm. We're going to learn what a pencil is. We're going to learn when I'm at school, when I play, this is what I do. So it's just, it was just one of the tools that I thought to use.
And you're doing this online.
Yes.
Throughout the world.
Yes.
Where is your biggest market?
It changes.
Mm.
Initially, it was the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Then it changed to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Then at some point, it was South Africa. Actually, right now, it is South Africa.
Mm.
It's South Africa, yes. But I do, and you know, we've actually done every continent except for Asia.
That's interesting. and people can find you online.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll put the details so that people reach out to you. I think we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to go to Electa's passion, and that passion is for music and singing, and where that passion came.
Can't fully fulfill your purpose if you don't know who you are.
Welcome back to our conversation with Electa Kudzai-Vambe, a creative singer, songwriter, cultural ambassador, and a teacher. So teaching, Electa, seems to have met with a big passion of yours. And you've just sang a song for us right now, singing. Talk to us, take to us back to the day or the time you discovered that you had this passion for singing.
I can't pinpoint a day, but I do remember a particular thing I used to do with my little sister. We used to sit outside the house. Our windowsills were low, and I would pretend to play the piano there and make her sing. And so I was her music teacher. So I think I've just always enjoyed that. I think I was about grade one or two when we were doing that. Then with time, I guess I didn't realize it. And it's a thing that I think parents should really look out for.
Mm.
Is what do your children enjoy? Just listen and watch. Because fortunately, they then noticed a bit later that she seems to like this music thing. And in grade six, I joined the choir. And then from there, I was just a chorister throughout. And I remember they bought me a keyboard for my 11th birthday. Oh, that was the best day of my entire life.
Wow.
Because it was recognition that, you know, because generally parents, old school parents, my parents were old school, I suppose, to me, were very, let's focus on your academics. We want academics, that's paramount. But with them, the minute my father heard that I'm interested in music, oh, he was, what does she want? They got me a keyboard. And then later I decided, I don't want the keyboard, I want the guitar. And my dad's fine, buy her the guitar. So it was whatever I wanted in terms of music. I was supported 100%, very much supported. So, yeah, I think I've always wanted to be a singer, I suppose. I just found myself singing. Mm.
But the acoustic night with Tariro Negitari sort of changed the course of your music career.
Yes.
Take us there.
Well, so I was in South Africa at the time when I met a gentleman called Andrew Baird. He's a producer. Then I was moving back home after university and I said to him, can you refer me to somebody? I want to start singing.
Mm.
Then he introduced me to David Singwayo. And so he says, you can come by the studio. So that particular day, I went to the studio and there were a whole lot of people there. And Tarone Gitari was one of them. Was a Naturity was there. Prayer Soul was there. Pure Wood was there. KV was there. And I was like, oh, look at all these musicians. And I couldn't believe people were not going to work but they were in the studio singing. And I absolutely fell in love with, and they were amazing to me. They just took me right in, and the entire started Acoustic Night. And I remember she says to me, do you want to sing? Why don't you come along and you can sing? And from there, it just took off. And it's still going on, Acoustic Night. It's just now happening in Bulawayo, but it's there. And it's a perfect platform for any musician to trampoline off into a music career.
What does music do to you?
It almost like, if you think of a flower blossoming and opening up, that's what it does to me. Mm. Like, I feel like I'm right in the in my element. I am where I'm supposed to be. And I think I do struggle with big audiences, though. I tend to prefer intimate settings because I like to connect. And I feel like if it's too big, the connection sort of disappears. But yeah, I feel like I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Where were you born?
I was born in Harare, in Zimbabwe, at Mbuyanyanda Hospital, to my parents.
Mm-hmm. Are they alive? Are
your no, alive? Both my parents passed. Okay. I lost my mother when I was 17.
Okay.
Then I lost my dad when I was around 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
And which schools did you go to?
That question. The reason why I tend
laugh.
To hesitate.
You're laughing.
I hesitate because... Yeah. People, they judge. They just immediately
That's
judge.
All right. But it's okay. Let them judge.
I'll let
them
you judge. Yeah? I'll let you judge. Mm-hmm. So for primary school, I started off at North Park in Mount Pleasant. I was there for grade 1 and 2. Then in grade 3, I went to boarding school in Diggerfold in Marondela. Then for high school, I was at Peterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
My daughter is at Peterhouse.
Oh, lovely.
So I'm judging.
Oh, you're judging me.
Yes. And then from Peterhouse?
I went to university in South Africa. I went to Monash University.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came back. Then I did my master's in Zimbabwe.
You did a master's in development studies.
That's correct.
Was that deliberate? What were you trying to achieve doing a master's in development studies?
I feel like I just always felt like I need to do one more, just one more step. Initially, it was a business. I wanted to do a master's in business, but I thought, no, it's not really... So I sort of gravitated towards developmental studies because I felt like that was just more me. Mm. I think I'm more of a sort of psychologist, humanitarian, social studies type of
you're
person.
A people person.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're a people. I mean, I can feel that connection.
Right.
And when you look at the way you were brought up, your mom and dad, may their souls rest in peace, what did you get the most from your parents?
Hard work.
Mm.
My parents were such hard workers. And I think, thinking about their lives, they grew up Kumusha, Kumondoro. They were neighbors, actually. So they left a rural setting to set up a life in Harare and were able to send 3 children to really good schools and to university. And they did whatever it took. My mom actually, and they told me that they actually bought the house because she used to Kuruga Majuzi. How do you say that in English? To
Kuruga Majuzi. To yes. Google is going to use yes. to make it English.
Yes.
Or a language.
Precisely. Mm. And, you know, and my father was in corporate, and then he moved and started his own thing. He became an entrepreneur. So it's just I learned so much by just watching them. And they did their best. They did exceedingly beyond what the odds were stacked against them, but they did really well, in my opinion. Yeah. Mm.
And you went into corporate. Tell me about your corporate journey.
So when I got back, I worked...
Got back from South Africa.
From South Africa to
Zimbabwe,
University, yes.
Yeah.
So I did a graduate training program for about a year, but I didn't enjoy that, unfortunately.
Graduate training program with who?
With... what's it called? It's an agriculture shop.
Okay.
They sell agriculture. I just can't remember the name.
That's fine. That's all right.
I wasn't keen on selling seeds and jipikiri, unfortunately. So I did. As soon as I was done with that, I decided this
is not for me.
And you know what I love about that is I went and I told my dad. I sat him down and said, Dad, I'm not enjoying this. I really expected, this is life. You're not going to enjoy everything. Do you know what he says to me?
Mm-hmm.
He said, so quit. I said, really? Yes.
I can do that.
Quit. If you don't like it, leave. I thought, oh, thanks. So I left. And That's what I, that's another thing I picked up from my parents. Is one, they were very loving, actually.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say they didn't get hugs and kisses. That surprises me.
You got lots of that.
My parents were very affectionate. And they were also, like my dad, very honest. And if you don't like it, leave it. Because we were, it's sometimes, you know, you feel like, I have to do this. But with that, he said, if you don't like it, leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And so
after
from
that,
there,
where did you
I
go?
Moved to... It was someone who was doing private equity investment in Zim from South Africa. It's someone I knew. So I worked with them for a bit. I was their assistant. And then from there, I moved to... Where did I move to from there? I moved to another small... So I was always into small companies, small startups, microfinance.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there for a little bit. Then when it closed, then I moved to a big telecoms company.
In Zimbabwe?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Then I worked there for about 3 years.
And then you came into the diaspora? Then,
yeah, yes. And so at that time, that's when it was so stressful for me. My goodness, I was so stressed.
In Zimbabwe?
Yes.
Talk to me about that stress. What does it look like?
I was just in the wrong place.
Yeah.
I was just in the wrong place.
Work-wise?
Yes, work-wise.
Okay.
I felt it's a good job and I can make money from this. So one of the things I've now learned is that shouldn't drive you. I was miserable. So miserable.
The money was good.
Yes.
It was a good job.
Yes,
it was. But you're miserable.
I was miserable. The pressure was so much that I think at some point, I remember crying. I was coming out of church, literally walking out of church, and my phone was ringing.
Mm.
And I had several missed calls from work. It's a Sunday. And I just felt violated. Like, I'm at church. You can't even wait for me to come back to work on Monday. And that really upset me. And I thought, you know what? I think it's unfortunate I wasn't checking. Maybe it's fortunate. I wasn't checking my blood pressure at the time. But if I was, I'm sure it was really high. So I left because it wasn't working for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is that the moment you decided to leave Zimbabwe and come to the diaspora?
No, actually. No. I was still in Zim. And that's when I decided, because on the side, I had a side hustle of teaching children. I've always loved working with children. So I was teaching children to swim.
Mm.
So I was a swimming instructor on weekends. And then I thought, why don't I just do this full time? So I jumped ship, literally jumped, because there was no guarantee.
Is this 2019?
Yes.
When you decided,
yes.
Enough of corporate life.
I'm done with that.
I'm going to do this stuff.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So
what I found interesting with that is you've done finance.
Yes.
You've done investment.
Yes.
You've done tried selling seeds and nails.
Yes.
And then you sickle on children. I mean,
yes.
That's fascinating.
Right.
Talk to me about that.
I think it's the gift element that I possess. I just think in hindsight, I sat down and I did look at my life and I thought, this is so clear. From the beginning, it was always... I was always with children. At church, I was always the one doing the Sunday school. I was so comfortable with them. Then if it's at work, it's like, oh, you seem to be good at this. Why don't you do the training? So there's the teaching element. At university, I became a tutor. You know, help the first years. You seem to understand the concepts. You help the first years. So it just sort of was just clear throughout.
Mm, mm.
So I thought, well, and then my side hustle also with the children, I just needed to be with children during my life somewhere. So that was one of the parts I chose. And that's how I ended up being a swimming instructor. And then COVID hit.
Mm.
Now I can't teach swimming, but I need an income. And that's where Shona was born, the Shona School.
When did you leave Zimbabwe?
I left Zimbabwe 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yes. And then I came here.
Mm.
Yes.
What was the push or pull factor for you to come into the diaspora?
Because I know I can do much more if I have the resources. So I have, my mind is just so full of ideas, but I need to be in a particular place in order to be able to fulfill that. Just one of the things I'm even thinking is gaming, Shona gaming. And how can I do that if I'm in Zimbabwe? I mean, I can, but I think if I'm closer to people who develop these things, I think I'll be able to do it better.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Are you beginning to enjoy the benefits of being in the diaspora? And where the resources are available?
I would say yes. I value convenience. I love convenience, and that's why we do it online, and so that a parent literally opens a laptop and does the lesson. Sometimes we even do it, the child is in the car on their way to another activity. So I just love the ability to do that and the use of technology. So this is why I want to put this in the tech space so that it's convenient and accessible.
I like the games, Shona games.
Yeah.
What's your thinking around that?
Well, we did them physically, but like I said, you're now in a country where you are the only Shona people in that region, or maybe you do have other friends, but you'll find for me, I don't actually know some of the games that my parents used to play. So it's one of those, I will look for the ideas and we'll put it somewhere and then hopefully we can get it online because children love gaming. Mm. It's what they spend their days doing, especially when it's cold. They can't play outside. So at the very least, they can at least learn while they're playing.
Mm. How many children of yours do you have?
I have one.
You've got one.
I have a son, yes.
And are you finding, how old is
your son? He's 13.
He's 13,
yes.
These challenges that you're talking about, the languages, the issue of identity. I mean, I like one thing that you said here, that what you're doing is not just a language program.
Right.
It's a movement to demystify the challenges of learning Shona. Is that contained in your life? Are you seeing that happening?
Yes.
To me about that.
It's so rewarding because I decided to be very deliberate. So what we did is we started to work on our family tree. But because I don't know his father's side, we went kwa Sekuru. Sekuru, we want to learn about our family. Oh, he was beyond excited. That's what they like to do, grandparents. Mm. So we went to Sekuru and then he drew it out for us and we documented it. And then we did my side of the family. I went to my tete and she also documented it. What I please implore people to do is record it, because you'll find my tete kept forgetting. Because now it was all oral,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't recorded. So now, because he found out that his origins are Portuguese, now he just wants to go to Portugal. That's all he talks about. I want to go to Portugal. And so it's one of those where he's now become excited about who he is in terms of his background and his identity, because now he knows it what forms who he is today. And now if he's informed by his history and knowing what he is, you know, his gifts, his traits, and the people who came before him, he then has an idea of who he is and what then he can occupy the space of his purpose on this earth.
Why is it important for us to be aware of our identity? I mean, some people would say, you know, we live in a global village. I'm okay wherever I am. Why does it matter for the Shona identity, the Zimbabwean identity? Why should we go there?
Because you can't fully fulfill your purpose if you don't know who you are. Knowing who you are informs your purpose. So I know that I can sing, I can teach. So this is why I'm in this space here's the thing. Everyone was created on purpose. There's no mistakes. We're too detailed to be mistakes. So because my son is who he is, so for example, my son now knows who he is. He was made on purpose and he's detailed. So it also means God made him a Shona boy on purpose. Mm-hmm. God made him come from me and his dad on purpose. And he comes from his grandparents. Everything is deliberate. Because he needed to be who he is to have the particular DNA that he has in order to fulfill his purpose.
And he must know that
purpose. So he has to know. Because if he doesn't, how then do you do what you're supposed to do? It's like going into a space of you know, I don't know, maths, but you have no idea how to add.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yeah.
Electo, I'm going to stop you there. Please, at home, don't go away. When we come back, I want to just go to perhaps an uncomfortable space. You are in the diaspora. What are the pain points? What are the pleasures? I know a lot of people say it's not a bed of roses out here. So when you come back, we're going to go to that place. So please, see you on the other side.
feel like I don't have as much time at home with my son as I would like. Even to socialize, there's very little. It's like socially bankrupt. I barely have time. Mm.
Welcome to our conversation with Electa Kudzai Vambe, a creative singer, songwriter, cultural ambassador, and a teacher. I love books, and books are very important in this show. You have already written a book. Talk to us through, you know, the idea of writing this book.
Okay.
And how long it took you to write this book. Mamiriro Ekunze.
You can maybe try this one.
Ah, umumo womkhathi.
Yes.
Right. Talk to me about the experience and the motivation.
Very good. So at one time, someone prophesied to me that I was carrying a book. And for me, it was a really detailed 400-page book because I had a book I wanted to write. But I just thought, oh, it's a negative space, so why don't I write this book? And it's my pride and joy. There's so many more coming. It's not just the only one. So what I wanted to do in this book is inclusion. If you notice on the cover, you've got different races. Well, it's the same race children, but they're different. They look different. Mm. So we have a mixed child, a black child, a child with albinism, and a child with vitiligo. Mm-hmm. Because we want children to understand that as much as we are the same, we're also different. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's okay. So I wrote it in the simplest form because I noticed that my students, a lot of them can't speak Shona, so there's no need for it to be detailed and laborious in reading. It's very simple, but it's fun, very colorful. Like I said, I like a lot of color. So that was the inspiration from the lessons. So each lesson is, I wanted to have a book to go with it. Mm. And this is one of the books, one of the lessons, The Weather, with the song. So it's got a song, a book, and the lesson. Mm.
Yes. Talk to me about what's been the biggest challenge that you've experienced in the work that you do, and what could be a big game changer for your current pursuit?
The biggest challenge, I'll start with initially, was being laughed at. Hmm. Oh, I was laughed at. To an extent where someone called me and said, do you need a job?
That hurt me. Oh, man.
Yes. They called and said, you seem desperate. Do you need a job? I can help you. And I said, no, I'm perfectly fine. Thank you. I really am. So I love this with my entire heart. And as much as I ignored the laughs,
Do you still talk to this person who said you need a job?
I have not right now, but I just understood them.
Yeah.
I wasn't judged. I didn't. I understood them. They just didn't get it. And a lot of people laughed at me because I understand that too. I'm not exactly the best Shona speaker. I just told you I dropped out at ZJC.
Yeah.
So I predominantly speak English. But I said to myself, let me teach what I can. Then where I end, we get somebody else to come in. And that's what we do. We've got other teachers who continue after a certain, at the beginning, and then they continue because they're qualified to do it. Mm. So
so that's, you were laughed at. What else? What other challenge?
One of the other challenges was not knowing what to do. So I'll tell you the story of
how you did it whilst not knowing what to do.
I won't even lie to you. The initial, I had lessons starting. The first ever lesson was on the 2nd of June in 2020. I think on the 28th of May, I still didn't know. I didn't even have my first lesson. So I reached out to a good friend of mine. I have to mention her, Wadzanai Chiwiri. And she...
Wadzanai?
Chiwiri. Mm-hmm. She did A-level Shona. And she helped me. She sat with me and she put together the first maybe two or three lessons. She said, we start with A-E-U-U-U, and we go from there. She gave me material to help me along. And from there, we just took off. And here we are.
Any other battles that you've had to endure?
The students just kept coming. And because of the nature of the lessons, I didn't even need to advertise at that point. They were just telling each other. And then, oh, I heard from so-and-so that you do this. I heard from so-and-so. And to the point where I remember I had 60 students and I was teaching them alone in 2020. That was a lot of work. And the thing is, because of the time zones, I'd start as early as 8 o'clock in Australia and then finish at midnight with American students. So it was so rewarding. I really, really enjoyed it.
And you started not knowing what to do.
Yes.
A lot of people would say that's a recipe for disaster. But I know somebody who says, actually, that's a good thing. Talk to me about, it can be easy, mm-hmm. starting something not knowing what to do. Mm-hmm. There's a lesson there for a lot of people. I mean, how did you do it? Talk to us about the doubting yourself, the fear of I don't know enough.
I think that whole, if you don't know how to do something, say yes and then figure it out. Learn how to do it. So like I said, I reached out to a friend who had done A-level Shona. So I think she knew what she was talking about. And the whole, just reach out to your network. You will find somebody who knows or at least can guide you. And with time, I started getting people just reaching out to actually help. I had a parent who said to me, you need to register this. This is big. I had another parent who reached out and said, why don't you try this? And I'd get ideas. And so another challenge is the finances to then do these big ideas that I have that also came from other people, like the gaming and the animations. I want to have animations. We want children to watch cartoons in Shona.
Is that work in progress or some is still an idea?
It's something I want to do. Okay. I have been talking to some friends. Mm. I've got other friends in the space.
We've got animation people watching right now, both in Zim and in the UK. We actually have some that we'll be talking to.
Yes.
So
please reach out. Let's collaborate. Let's do something. Mm. I do have some friends in the same space. We've got Ndoto Kids in South Africa who are also there into animation for children. We've got Tida and Tipa. Mm-hmm. They also do animation. There's just so many of them. We've got Gomayorira, they write books for children. So there's a lot of us who are pushing this cultural identity agenda. So yeah, it's powerful for me that it's not a one-man thing. We're all trying.
So I did say, and a lot of people have said to me that, and I was in the diaspora myself for 18 years in South Africa, being in the diaspora is not a bed of roses.
No.
Talk to us now about your own personal experiences, the good and bad of being in the diaspora.
I'll start with the good. I value convenience. I love convenience. Things shouldn't be hard.
Yeah.
So I like that. I really appreciate the convenience of having things delivered to you. But I think the negative of it is they have to be delivered to you because you're never home. Mm. Always working. It's work, work, work. So I feel like I don't have as much time at home with my son as I would like. Even to socialize, there's very little. It's like socially bankrupt. I barely have time to share with, you know, times with people. You have to really sacrifice because a lot of the time your relative doesn't even live close enough for you to pass through. Mm. You have to plan and drive an hour and a half to go and see them and drive an hour and a half back. So that's the unfortunate part.
What makes being in the diaspora worth it?
This.
Okay.
I know what I want to do, and I know that this is the path to do it, and I know it's God ordained.
What's the big picture when you look 5 years down the road? What is it that you're trying to build?
I see children loving who they are, self-love, and just preservation. This is don't nakayedu. This is I call it nakayedu because I'm the custodian of this. We all are, and I need to pass it on in as the best form that I can. And so I see children being proud of who they are, sharing who they are. I had a particular student in Australia who actually said, I always ask, why do you want to do these lessons? And he says to me, because I have nothing to say on cultural day at school.
Wow.
I don't know
anything about
myself, where I come from. You know, the Japanese children come with kimonos. These ones come with that. And I have nothing. And I thought, that's devastating. I said, don't worry, I've got you. So we taught him. And then guess what? Like 3 months later, he says, ma'am, can you please stop calling me by my English name? And can you start calling me Panache?
Wow.
from there, I started calling myself Kudzai. I actually call myself that because he inspired me. And I thought, he's so proud of who he is. And now he has something to share with his...
Because you have done it. Because Kudzai has encouraged that.
Yes, that's exactly it. And like I said, in the lessons, we don't just teach language. Mm. We beyond that, we teach food, manners, even to greet. Every lesson, Magadi Mdzidzis. When we're leaving, Chisarai Mdzidzis. You know, we boys learn, we teach them. That even before you eat, Pamsoroi. When they're done, Ah, Taguta Mdzidzis, Tinotenda. Even though they're eating food at their own house. But we try and make it as practical as possible so that it's not just language. It's beyond that. Tsika. And they know.
Wow. That's beautiful. I think you've already hinted there. What gives you the biggest kick from what you're doing?
The reward is the joy of the child and the pride that they have. They'll come and tell me, did this today at school? I told someone. Because sometimes it's not even just about Shona, just confidence. They said this horrible thing to me, and I told them, well, I like the way that I am. My hair is fine, because a lot of it's got to do with hair as well. So we do affirmations as well. We have a song that we sing. We go, Ganda rangu rakanaka, vudzi rangu rakanaka, inini ndakanaka, ndakanaka, ndakanaka. And we sing that. So it's
that's beautiful.
Yes, it's just always to encourage, you are perfect the way you are. No need to alter who
and,
you
and
are.
This is important in the diaspora because yes. I suppose you step out of the door, even before you do that, out of the house, you've already encountered some systemic racism on television and then in real life.
Yes.
So that kind of affirmation is very important, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think children experience it more than we do because grown-ups have a little bit of restraint, but not children.
And you're equipping them to face
exactly.
the world. What about taking it a step higher? This is not your responsibility, but as you're talking, I was listening to a professor the other day who says, Africa... The African Union has said Swahili should be our language so that we as Africans have a language with which we can communicate the 54 nations on the continent. What's your take on that?
I get that. Just like there's pidgin for most of West Africa, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with learning another language. I think that's okay. I'm actually wanting to translate. We've actually translated this into Swahili. We just need to finish it up and put it on the platform on Amazon. But I don't see anything wrong with that.
So there's an opportunity there for you.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Oh, yes. I'm very aware that Swahili is a big...
Yeah.
But I get it because it's spoken in a lot more lot more countries. But I am for that. Learn another language. Why not? But just don't forget yourself. We tend to rush to learn French and German. But what about your own language?
Is there anything that would make you consider going back to Zimbabwe? Is there anything that would make you pack your suitcases and say, I'm going back home? What would that be?
If I had the assistance, financial assistance to do this, yes, I would
do this back home?
Yes, I would definitely. Because my heart is there. That's where it is. But I'm just here because I have to do something in order to finance this. But if it's there, I'll just do this full time.
What message would you have for young women who are watching you? Our audience is global. They're watching you from all over the world. They're admiring what you've done, doing something when you know nothing about it, and doing something where people are laughing at you and say you should be doing something else. What message do you have for them?
Is just love yourself enough to learn about yourself. We tend to judge. See, someone else told us that our culture is evil. Someone else. And the group of people are not even in our culture. But they told us this and we believed them. At the very least, just do your research. Research with an open mind and then decide. So that's what I would say, because I've learned so much by just researching, asking questions with an open mind and understanding why why our ancestors did what they did and why they lived like this, there's a reason for everything. Mm. And you will find that that reason is going to build your character. Mm. They wanted us to be a particular character which will thrive and do well in this world.
We're beautiful.
Very.
We're special.
Taganak, taganak.
We're going to go to books now because a lot of people that watch this show love the Trevor Club book recommendations. By the way, we've started a book club on WhatsApp, which is actually going crazy. I think we've got over 600 people that are on that group, and the conversations are absolutely amazing. So what three books would you share with our book-loving audience out there?
Okay, so the first book is a parenting book. It's got a really long title. It's called The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read and Your Children Will Be Glad That You Did. The author is Philippa Perry. Mm-hmm. I just love how she goes into parenting.
I need to read that.
Yes, it's. I think it's profound in that it helps you to understand your children better.
The author is
Philippa Perry.
Mm, Philippa Perry.
Yes.
Okay. Second book.
The second book is by Tori Dunlap. It's called Financial Feminist. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the world in general, finances and the financial space is occupied by men. And I love how this young lady, she's only, in her 20s? Mm-hmm. And she's a millionaire. And she shares the practical ways of being financially free. And I think that everyone, not even just women, everyone should read that. It. Because it demystifies the fear of those jargon, those big words that... And she just makes it as simple as possible in how to manage your finances.
Mm-hmm. The third one?
Oh.
The third book.
Alexa Kuzayabambe. Oh, she's an amazing author. She's from Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
This is just the first of many books. Mm. There are way more coming. Mm. And I just always think of what Miles Monroe said. He said, "When you the graveyard is full and I need to empty all these books. I need to empty out so that when I go to my grave, I'm empty and I've done everything I was purposed to do."
Oh, beautiful. This has been amazing talking to you.
Thank you so much.
There's a book in all of us.
That's it.
If not books in all of us.
That's true.
And if we take time to get into ourselves and unearth those books like you're doing an amazing job.
Thank you so much.
We're proud of what you're doing. We wish you all the very best. Hopefully when we come back for the In Conversation with Trevor UK series next time, we'll be able to sit down with you and maybe you would have written another book.
That's correct. Yeah. More just books. One. A lot of more books, yeah.
Thank you so much for creating the time.
Thank you
to
much,
join
Mr.
us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Allow me now to turn to our viewers who are all over the world who watch us every Monday. Remember, we are a weekly show. We are out on Mondays, 7 a.m. Central African time on YouTube. To ensure that you don't miss out on any of these quality conversations, I invite you to go onto YouTube, press that subscribe button, like, and share. We've gone a step further and built a website where all our content sits, our newsletter, which is weekly. Go onto that website. Again, click onto the subscribe button for the newsletter, and you get our refreshing, thought-provoking insights every week. Until next time. Cheers to you all.